to the bonus hour. I have to tell you, Bill, a lot of times we do a radio tease to get listeners to follow us from 7:20 a.m.
Sure.
to the stream.
Yep.
But we were in suspense, too, and we need to find out more. Rick Poole is with us. He has made the trip from Naperville to Mount Everest, up and then back down, and you have lived to tell about it. And I don't mean that to be funny. You live to tell about it.
Well, that was the plan. It only counts if you come home.
Yeah, I guess so.
That was the mindset that I went with.
Yeah.
But
we were talking to you on 7:20 a.m. about, did you see dead bodies? I don't remember where exactly we left off, but it was not pretty, was it?
No, this was a moment on the mountain that I could not have possibly predicted. Weather happens, scary moments happen. I fell into a crevasse on the way down, that happens. So, I mean, all these things you kind of, okay, that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of death that we ended up seeing firsthand, I don't know what to do with that. I didn't know what to do with it at the time. So when we went from Camp 3 to Camp 4, which is an 8-hour, reasonably difficult journey, as we're passing the Lhotse Camp, which is kind of halfway to Camp 4, for those climbing Lhotse Mountain, fourth highest peak on the planet, right beside the trail, just a couple feet off the trail, was a Russian climber who had died a couple days prior.
Mm-hmm.
Just laying right there. How do you process that? I don't know. It's the first, outside of a funeral, I've never seen someone dead.
It's not human nature to climb over a dead person. You've been taught, or your instinct is to help them remove the body or something, but that's not the case.
There's absolutely nothing we could do for him. He's gone.
Yeah.
But he's right there as a stark reminder that, hey, by the way, if you mess this up, right, this is going to be you. So we get up to Camp 4 and we rest for about 9 hours, then we're up again and we're going to the summit. And so we left Camp 4 at midnight. And so this is May 23rd now. May 22nd was the day everybody heard about and all the lines, and I think 4 people died on the 22nd alone. And so the first 30 minutes of the walk on summit day of Everest is really pretty simple. It's not that steep. It's not technical. You're just kind of walking up to the triangular face of Everest itself. And even before we get there, there's dead body, number 2, just laying to the right of the trail. A couple of his friends were taking him down. I assume they were his friends.
Mm-hmm.
So they will allow you to try and take your loved one down, but they will not do anything with a recovery effort, correct?
No, they will, and they did.
Oh.
Afterwards, and there's a rescue Sherpa team also. It's just a very difficult thing to do. So yeah, there's no rules on what you can and can't do. If you know someone who's struggling or has passed away, you can try to do whatever you want.
But aren't there ladders and ropes that would make it nearly impossible to transport a body downward, or no?
No, it depends on where you are. So as I tell this story, you'll kind of get it. So, the first 5 hours of hiking on summit day is pretty straightforward. It's not overly difficult. It gets a little steep, but it's kind of a straight shot up to this thing they call the balcony. And so after we saw that body, 30 minutes in, we hiked for another hour and a half or so. And here's dead body number 3, this one in the middle of the trail. And so I was told it was a woman. I don't know, because everybody's still geared up.
Yeah.
So you're not really seeing much, but, there they are, still geared up. But she was upside down, tangled a little bit in the rope, and in order to get around her, you literally had to unclip from the rope, step over her exposed hand, step in between kind of her knees, clip back in, and then keep going. Which, not that the other two weren't rough enough, but that one is...
Sure.
So at this point, I'm kind of thinking to myself, like, what is going on up here? It was really disconcerting to be that up close and personal in this, and it just kept happening. I mean, just before we got to the balcony, there was another body off to the right. And then just before we ascend the Hillary Step is where Don Cash lies, 54-year-old American climber from Utah. I didn't know it was him at the time. I was told later. So, You know, plus there was two additional folks who were really struggling on our day who passed away later that same day. And, you know, that's an awful lot of death to be exposed to. And it's hard to see that without questioning your own mortality, number one. And two, just the wisdom and morality of what the heck you're doing. Like, is everything that we're not at war. We all came here voluntarily.
Right.
And yet, everything that we experienced on the way up.
Yeah.
Was really, really hard, and I still haven't processed all of that.
Rick, the reason this was one of the more deadly seasons for Mount Everest was that the window of climbing was so much shorter. The weather kind of allows for a certain window to climb that mountain, and it was shorter this year, right?
That is correct. So it was really a three-day window this year. It was May 21, 2-3 is where the jet stream moved off of Everest.
Yeah.
And it just forced everyone on the mountain to be up there, you know, in a very small window, which is why those 3 days were so busy. If we had done this in 2018, there was an 11-day stretch, consecutive days of pick your day, weather's going to be great. And they experienced, you know, very little, if any, of what we saw this year in 2018, which, you know, it's still a dangerous place, but they didn't experience the crowding that we had this year.
In some ways, does that make the story more exciting to tell? I know that sounds crazy, but you were there on the year, the most dangerous year. Does that intensify the story?
Of course.
It does.
You know, it's, you know, it's media attention, which is, you know, what we're doing here. And, you know, people died. That tends to attract the media. So there was a lot more attention. When I got home, I realized how big of a story it was.
We were all talking about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, really.
Yeah, I mean, I knew what the news was. I knew it wasn't great because I was there.
Yeah.
And then as I started coming home and getting into civilization, realizing, my goodness, this headline's everywhere.
Right.
And then, yeah, getting some of the media outlets reaching out, wanting to talk and discuss it. And many of my fellow climbers, there were 11 of us on the team.
Yeah.
Everybody went back to their respective towns and ended up in their own newspaper or, you know, on a show of some sort.
Sure.
And, yeah, this question comes up again and again and again, because there's also a lot of misinformation about how all that happened. You know, are they issuing too many permits?
Well, what are your thoughts? What are some of the stories you read or heard in the media that you can disprove?
Well, one of them is that, the problem was they're letting too many people on the mountain. That seemed to be a common theme of a lot of the stories. And it was a record setting year for the number of permits at 381, but last year was 377. So there was no more people on the mountain this year than any other year. The difference was what Bill pointed out earlier is this small weather window. And then there was a lot of talk about the amount of trash and the number of bodies. And with the exception of Camp 4, I mean, there's some trash here and there, but I didn't see a lot of that.
Yeah.
I think some of those stories come from the north side. Camp 4 can definitely be cleaned up.
Yeah.
But that's tough to do because it's 26,000 feet.
Yeah, who's going to want to go there with a garbage, that little poker, and start picking up garbage?
Well, it's tough to do, right? So they just actually sent a team of Sherpa up there. This is 5 days ago now. And they brought down, I forget how many tons of garbage, a lot. And they brought down 3 or 4 bodies as well. So they can, up to a certain point, bring some of these things down. So it's not just because they're letting too many people go.
Yeah.
Is why it happened.
You said a team of 11. Do most people have teams? I didn't realize. I thought this was something you did on your own.
Definitely not on my own. There's not a chance I'd make this on my own.
No.
Some people do it on their own, who are far more skilled than I. But a vast majority of the folks on the mountain do have a team. A vast majority do hire a guide of some sort. I wish more people had one-on-one Sherpa help on summit day. That would probably, over time, cut down on some of this, you know, injury and death that we hear about.
Right.
Because, again, Aang Nuru, my Sherpa, he saved my bacon on the way down a couple of times.
Yeah.
It was his fifth summit, and he's highly experienced on the mountain. But
why does he keep going back? I know he gets paid for it, but
yeah,
that has to be it.
Yeah, it's money. So when you're there, you know, my wife.
But if you die, you can't spend it.
Nope. And this is actually, so it's money is why they do it. There's not much in the way of an economy in the Khumbu Valley.
Right.
You know, the trekkers and the climbers are the economy. We are definitely number one.
Yeah.
And so the climbing Sherpa can make $5,000 to $10,000 in a season doing this. And so, yeah, it's money.
Yeah.
And which, you know, enters a whole nother door of controversy is, you know, if I didn't go, would Robbie be there climbing this mountain? Did I put his life at risk in order to do this?
Right.
And it's kind of hard to look at that and say, no.
But how would else would he have made money?
Because I did. Well, he would have been there anyway, even if
I
didn't go.
But I mean, saying.
If we all decided we're not going to do this
because
it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Because more than half the deaths end up being the Sherpa because they go up and down the mountain so many more times than we do.
Right.
But yeah, it's money is the short answer to that question.
You have to check in with your insurance carrier before a climb like this.
I did check on my life insurance.
Because will they insure you for this?
No.
They won't, will they?
No,
because it's voluntary?
The existing policies would pay because I've owned them long enough.
Yeah.
However, I tried to get an additional insurance sum to go to Everest, and they said absolutely not.
What a great question, Bill. Always thinking of the money.
Well, I play ping pong, so I know.
I can see how that would relate, yeah.
So, all right, May 23rd, I'm just realizing this wasn't even a month ago. I mean, aren't you still, like, recovering?
Well, yeah, I lost 23 pounds doing this. I've gained a few of them back, which has been really enjoyable.
I bet it is.
I'm back. I've recovered 16 of the 23 pounds I've lost.
Yeah.
So I'm getting back to normal.
Do you have nightmares about it at all?
No, I don't have nightmares. You know, again, 66 day journey. I was sick for three of them, which is no bueno, because I was sick above base camp, which is even worse.
Yeah.
So that didn't feel so good. But everybody,
an altitude sickness, is that what it is, or it's beyond that?
Altitude doesn't help, but it's beyond that.
Yeah.
I had the 1-2 of flu-like symptoms and intestinal distress together.
Oh, great.
What a great place to get it.
A lot of fun. Yeah, a lot of fun. With no indoor plumbing. Good times.
Oh, no.
So those 3 days weren't so enjoyable. However, and then, you know, Summit Day, there were parts of that were not so great. But the other 62 days are spectacular. I mean, it's a truly amazing place to hang out.
Did you see, there's a documentary last year, Free Solo. Did you see it?
I did.
All right. So in it, remind me, because I only remember little bits, Alex Hanold is the man's name.
Mm-hmm.
They studied his brain. They did a brainwave thing, and they couldn't find fear sensors in his brain. They existed,
right,
but they couldn't find them.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? You've shown us that there were moments that you were very afraid, but how do some people not have that?
I have no idea. I watched that movie several times, we all did, and I was probably more nervous watching the movie than Alex was doing it. I have no clue how someone does something like that, unroped up El Capitan, and at no time anywhere in my journey was I anywhere close to that type of danger.
Yeah,
I mean, very rarely were we even going vertical, so I don't know how he does that,
right?
And I can tell you, at least every climber that I was hanging out with, we do have an active fear chip.
Yeah.
Because we would talk about it on the few days where you're doing something above and beyond, a little more interesting than it should have been.
Yeah.
Like sometimes through the ice fall. Like, did you see that ladder? Yeah, the thing was tilted at like a 15-degree angle. Scared the heck out of me.
God.
You know, we all have to go across it anyway. So I don't know.
What are you afraid of? If not something like this, what irrational fear do you have?
As it relates to the mountain or just in general?
Just in general.
In
is there
life.
Something that you shouldn't
spiders,
be afraid of that you are afraid of?
I'm not a fan of spiders, and there's a couple right outside your window.
I know, they
are.
They swing themselves up here 18 floors. I don't know how they do that.
That's a good question. I don't know. Nothing immediately comes to mind, and believe me, I keep trying to find it.
Yeah.
Isn't
that interesting, though, that that's a challenge for you, is there must be something that scares me. What is it? I got to find it.
Well,
why do you have to find it?
I don't know that I'm going to push any more to find it. I've gone, you know, I think as far as I'm willing to go. I can verify that I am scared of dying.
Yeah.
I came close enough to that to realize that's a pretty big fear of mine, but I think that's everyone who can hear our voices.
Yeah.
Outside of that, spiders truly, I'm not a big fan, so that's kind of freaking me out over
You've
there.
You've got kids. If one of your kids said, hey, I want to do what you did, I'm going to climb that same mountain, what would you say?
We'd have a lengthy talk. That would not be a quick yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would say immediately no, because some of what I experienced was really unique to this year. However, there'd be quite a conversation around that. and some rules. I think I would probably ultimately end up saying okay.
Yeah.
If the proper training, if you go to these mountains, if you hire one of these groups to guide you,
yeah,
then probably.
Yeah. Wow.
We've got Rick Poole in the studio with us. He lives in Naperville, and less than a month ago on May 23rd, he climbed Mount Everest and lived to tell about it. What could you possibly do next to top this? I mean, you must not have any goals, because what else could you do that's better than this?
I don't know. I don't want to top this. I think for a long period of time, for the last 15 years, I seem to have had this itch that I just can't quite scratch. And it all started in 2003. A really good friend of mine, Brian Hansen, said, hey, I'm going to go run the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, Brian was 180 pounds of muscle tucked into a 250-pound body, so I didn't think he was going to make it.
Yeah.
He did. I did it with him. And it kind of launched from there. So we went through the whole running series, and then it was triathlons for a long time. And then it was adventure racing, and ultimately, you know, mountains. It led ultimately to the top of the world. And for the first time in that entire journey, at least as I sit here and talk to you, I'm not itchy.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. It satisfied that itch. Someone has texted in and wants to know, you said you spent above like $70,000 to do this. What do you do as your day job that allowed you to afford this? Or did you save for this for years and years?
Well, some of both, but I'm in the financial services industry. And I've been in it for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I've been here in Chicagoland doing it since 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you're in sales and you call on the same set of clientele for a really long period of time, that tends to work out okay.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do for a living, to answer that caller's question. So,
and that's your choice. I mean, how people spend their money. Some people want to go take, you know, 20 vacations. You kind of saved it up for this big thing.
Yeah, so no one in my family is allowed to take a vacation for the rest of their lives. Like, that's it. We've blown the budget.
Rick, have you sat in a bar where there's a guy bragging about going 4-for-4 in a softball game, and then another guy goes, I just won a badminton tournament, and you go, guys, I don't want to interrupt, but I just got back from Mount Everest. I went to the top and back. Has that happened yet?
No, that has not happened. Although, we have a joke that started in base camp, just between the climbers, that I've actually taken back home. Which is, you bring something up, and I find a way immediately to turn it into the fact that I summited Everest.
Yeah.
Oh, those flowers are beautiful. They sure are. Very colorful. It reminds me of the prayer flags on top of Everest.
I love it.
But no, not in public. I do it with these guys.
Privately,
over here.
Sure.
Privately. Yeah.
Kim Gordon has walked into the studio because she does news for us. And then on the Rokan show this afternoon, Kim, this is Rick Poole,
nice
from
to
Naperville
meet you.
To Mount Everest. He did it
so
last
cool.
month.
Wow.
Any desire to do it, Kim?
None. And yeah. I love outdoors, and I love to hike and bike and ski and
but
golf.
But this is a whole other animal.
No. I don't think I'm cut out for it.
Would you do a book? Have you thought about writing a book?
About? I've been asked that. I'm like, yeah. It'd be like 8 pages. What am I going to write about?
Oh, baloney. You spent a lot of time talking to us. These are all things we want to know. We want to experience it through you, because we'll never do it. What's the percentage of people that climb Mount Everest?
Well, 5,000 people have done it, right?
5,000, roughly, yeah. Divided by 7.5 billion, so not...
So you're
yeah.
pretty special.
Pretty, yeah. That's what I keep telling myself.
What does this group over here think?
Yeah, I'm special. Yeah, he gets us to sleep.
Rick's family is here, your two daughters and your wife. Mm-hmm. Do they climb at all?
Yeah, they do. So Sydney, my oldest over there, 16, she hiked up to Everest Base Camp, so she was with me. As did Megan.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the three of us for 2 weeks walking.
How long
through.
Does it take to get to base camp?
It's 11 days of hiking.
Just to the base?
Just to the base camp, yeah.
Wow.
Is that a hard goodbye as they leave you there at base camp and you're going up and they're coming back down? Is that a tearful goodbye, or is that how
yeah,
is that
handled? Rough.
Yeah, I bet.
As soon as the helicopter gets out of the way, because they helicoptered out of base camp. And that was terrifying unto itself.
Yeah.
Because it creates a lot of wind, and it was already cold. But yeah, when the helicopter rotors, when the whole noise of the helicopter just faded,
yeah,
I'm just looking around going, yeah, that was sad.
This is it.
Like,
yeah.
I'm going to spend the next, you know, 50 days here, and they're gone.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that was tough.
This is the most, you're the most interesting man. The world's most interesting
man. Take that,
Dos Equis
guy.
Yeah, I mean,
you're,
we don't need that
off
anymore.
The map.
It's really phenomenal hearing your whole experience. I can't even imagine it. And thanks for painting such a picture.
Yeah, well, thank you.
We will read the pamphlet when it's done. Give to read it.
You should write a book. I'm telling you, people want to know this.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to need some help, so maybe you'll have to connect me to somebody.
Encourage other people to do it?
No.
No?
I wouldn't encourage them to do it, no. I would
but
say,
if they
hey,
really
you
wanted
should go
to?
Do Mount Everest. Huh. Because, as you know, everything we've talked about,
right.
You have to really, really want to go do that.
Yeah.
And so you can do incredible things, right? I mean, you can focus and do absolutely unbelievable things, as I just proved. I'm not an athlete. I grew up singing and acting.
Yeah.
And, you know, top of Everest. So, yeah, that's one I wouldn't just openly go tell people to do, because there's some real risk with that. And there's some, that's, you know, physically, that's a truly difficult thing to do. And mentally.
Yeah.
It's a truly difficult
thing. If they were doing a production of The Odd Couple at the top of Mount Everest, would you consider it then?
Or just, Oklahoma.
You said singing and acting. Why aren't you doing Mount Everest the play?
Musical.
Yeah. Mount Everest the musical.
Well, I'll get Megan to help me with that.
Dancing right. Sherpas? Come on. Oh, I can see it
people love that.
Yeah. That's what we'll do. Everest the musical.
Acting and singing, anything we'd know you from?
No, goodness, no. I did it halfway through college. One show off Broadway, like way off Broadway. But then I got exposed to what real talent looked like, and I'm like, I'm thinking sales might be better suited for me.
When you were hiking up Everest, did you sing show tunes in your head?
Not on Everest, because you're making real oxygen decisions, but yeah. It's funny you say that, because on Rainier, I was driving my team crazy, because I would just bust into Music Man songs, and just launch into 76 trombones at any moment. So I did do something.
Beautiful.
Oh, that's great.
Great to meet you, Rick. What a story. What an incredible story. We're thrilled that you made it back alive, and more thrilled that you made it here with us. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Good luck to whatever
cool.
you do in the future, and I hope it's nothing.
All right. Thanks.
A quick break, and then more of us.
Thank you, Kim. You know, I just found a news story about Mount Everest. Late last month, scientists just installed a new window into the planet.
Mm-hmm.
They put a weather station at the top of Mount Everest.
Oh, they did.
Wow. Can you imagine getting all that equipment up there to install a weather station?
Uh-uh.
I mean, it's enough to get yourself up there.
Right.
I can't even believe that someone would want to do that.
So it took him, so he said 11 days to the base camp, and then another, was it a total of
60 days or something like that?
Just over 60, yeah. Just over 2 months. Yeah,
wow.
Start to finish. I love that he talks about the fear involved, because whenever I see these guys do it, in my head I go, they have to be fearless, because every second could be your last.
Right.
You're constantly looking down and seeing chasms that are 20,000 feet down, and you go, if I mess up... I mean, I feel like that when I'm climbing onto the second story on a ladder. Can you imagine?
No.
But if you don't have that fear, I feel like those people are going to die. You need to have that fear.
I guess so. Yeah,
you
I guess
have,
there
it,
has
it
to be some.
It can become debilitating, but you need to be afraid. I'm afraid of you.
Well, yeah, I am too. Who knows what I'm capable
That's
of.
That's why they bring me in here every
right,
day.
For safety reasons. Did you see the documentary Free Solo last year?
No.
This was this guy, Alex Hanold is his name, and he's considered the best of the climbers who don't use any tools. They just climb with their hands. Right?
Not even the little...
He's got little clips every once in a while, but it's not like your traditional mountain climbing tools. And he studies these mountains, like every inch of them, to know where every crevice is and mm-hmm. every dot, you know, what he can use for leverage and stuff. But our last guest, Rick, was saying that scared him to watch. He couldn't even watch that. That was too much. So you go, well, how are you able to navigate Mount right. Everest if that kind of stuff does scare you? I don't get it.
I guess it's
I think it's cute. You were talking about the scooters that are going to be mm-hmm. here, and you asked us during the commercial break, do you think you'd do it? And I'm like, yeah, probably. Bill's like, I almost died on vacation on a scooter.
A very close call in St. Thomas.
We just had a guy who climbed Mount Everest.
I know. I waited until he left. Okay. Until I said I was almost killed on a scooter.
I think, up to 15 miles an hour, so I think you'll
fast.
Be all right. You
That's
might get a
fast.
Few scrapes or bruises if you fall.
Raspberries.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, do you remember those as a kid? They
yes.
hurt.
Yes. Yes.
Got a lot of those, like playing softball, sliding.
Right. Right. You have to be very careful. And as a kid, it's even worse. As an adult, you just go, oh, it's part of the game, I guess.
What, to fall?
Yeah.
When you know, remember when you get like those sores from sliding? I used to call those bacon strips. Because
why was that a bacon strip?
Because it looked like a strip of bacon.
Oh, I guess it does
because
a little
you have those
bit.
Little lines.
Yeah. Yep.
The bacon strip.
Yeah.
Right.
It's all right.
A bacon strip's sore.
Down in southern Illinois, it's not that very, very south, actually, like around Coal City, which your wife was familiar
with.
Yes,
she lived there.
They have these hills that I, as a kid, always called meat hills because they the vegetation has now since grown on them. But back then it was strip mining. So they dig and there was a lot of clay in the soil.
Yeah.
So in the very center of the hill, it was kind of reddish, and it looked like a roast beef that was kind of a medium rare.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So we always called them meat hills.
Everybody referred to them as meat hills.
Well, our family
did. Yeah.
That's great.
I would like to talk to somebody from down that way. 312-235-2525.
From the meat hill area?
I coined the phrase meat hill. And now it's funny because, like I said, the vegetation has completely grown over them, so you can't tell that they're
it's
a meat hill underneath.
It's no longer meat, it's plant-based.
Oh, look at that.
Orient on line one.
Look at that, the Beyond Hill.
Yes. The Beyond Hill, that's what it's called now.
You'll live longer. Better for you. Did you, as a kid, did you do things that were potentially dangerous, but you just, as a kid, you just go, I'm omnipotent. Nothing bad can happen to me.
Oh, yeah.
I'll survive this. Were you doing stuff like that? Give me an example. What was something you did?
Like at camp, I would, you know, do these swims out to an island.
Like way longer than it should have been away.
I hauled ass on a mini bike several times in somebody's yard, and I would maybe ride those scooters, but I mean.
And riding without a helmet.
Without a helmet, 100%.
Did you ride? My friends and I used to do a thing where we'd see who could go the longest without holding the handlebars.
Yeah, without a helmet.
Without a helmet.
Yeah.
I didn't fall that much. Once you mastered that,
you could pull it off easily.
Yeah, but if you hit a bump or something,
then
like
you
that,
have to put your hand
on the road.
Well, are you idiots? Are you not going to put your hand down to recover?
The answer is yes and no. We are idiots, and we would not. You don't want to lose the battle. You got to not touch the handlebars.
Climbing trees, climbing on top of sheds, and jumping off, which was really stupid because every time it would knock the wind out of you, you'd think you'd learn.
Yeah, I would constantly climb up on cabinets, like in our kitchen. We had boxes that were on the top shelf that the only way I could reach is if I was standing on the cabinet.
How did your mom not give you away? I really just don't know.
She tried. She would offer a lot of money.
Babysitters. She would run into someone on the street and say,
perfect strangers would watch us.
What are you doing tonight?
Right. Want to watch our kids? Hmm. But I would be up on that second level, like on the cabinet, just, you know, walking along.
Like a cat, right?
So, yeah, very cat-like. And I remember two different instances, once in the kitchen and once in our bedroom, where I was falling backwards and held onto the little handles, you know, and that's all that saved me.
And the cabinets opened up and saved you?
Yeah. But like,
my God, Bill.
Both times, it's like, that could have knocked me out forever. I would have been killed.
Just like falling from Mount Everest.
It's similar. Yeah, Rick, I didn't share the story with Rick, but I know what he went through because I was up on the cabinet, similar to Mount Everest.
Someone has texted us, Bill and Wendy, best guest ever, completely enjoyed his story. I would certainly read his book. What is he thinking that people would not want to read about
this? He doesn't think it's interesting enough, but
it
is.
Well, that just shows how humble he is, you know, because like, you just don't want to brag about
right.
what you've done.
Right.
You brag about this.
I heard him say he climbed Rainier. Had he climbed other mountains before?
He climbed Prince Rainier. Not the mountain. He was at a dinner party and he just climbed them. So awkward.
There was some place in Mexico, he said, volcanoes that he scaled to.
Because a lot of the climbers do all the other mountains and then like Everest is their like grand finale.
Right. But I wonder if you go through some withdrawal then, because he says he's not going to do it anymore. A lot of guys who are involved, and girls who are involved in a certain activity like that, you feel a withdrawal afterwards.
Well, that's why I asked him if he's fully recovered. I went on one cruise in my life. That was it. And when I got home, I still kind of felt like I was rocking.
For days.
So that's, I don't mean nightmares, but you know, like sometimes when he closes his eyes, I wonder if he's envisioning, you know, the steep incline and crevices. Or do you say crevasse?
I go, I'm just a common man. I go, crevice.
I'm a crevice.
Are you? Yeah. Always.
Well, that's pretty amazing.
But that thing about the ladder being at a twisted angle and stuff, you saw that footage, right? They kept showing the lines climbing up and climbing down. And there was a bunch of those diagonal ladders that even if I was on the ground, I'd go, I'm not climbing that. Look at the weird angle that ladder's at. That's not safe. And they're way, 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 way up there.
How do those Sherpas do it? I mean, they
every day. Well, not every day, but for the season every day. Yeah. And then did he say that their income is $10,000 a year, but
that's a lot of money.
That's a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Right. Still, it's
not
enough.
What do you mean a year?
Well, their season is so short, so they make
only go
all
up
their
one
money.
Time.
Yeah.
I bet they got paid more than $10,000.
Yeah.
I would give my Sherpa a big tip if
Huge
I got
tip.
Up and down safely.
I bet the Sherpas ask for the tip at the beginning. Don't you think? Don't you think if you're a Sherpa, you go, why don't you, let's get rid of the tip now.
Yeah, let's take care of that.
Just in case.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you have to pay up front because I'm sure they give them to their family before they go.
Right. Right.
I just have no.
I'm
no
just
desire.
Not that adventurous.
So when Bertrand Travel puts together a Mount Everest package, we're all opting out on this?
We'll take another.
Come on.
You know, the way we were led to believe with these pictures and videos, it almost looked like there was just a rope that you just kind of like waited your turn and just walked up without any effort.
You're thinking of the mountain climber on Price is Right, aren't
right.
you?
Yeah, that guy.
I got to find that music I got to ruin everybody's weekend.
But it's not, they're not all just holding on to a rope on a line? Because I kept seeing that same picture.
Well, he said that they were, there's like the, what are they called? Not turbines, but something binds. Where you clip yourself to the rope.
Carabiner. Carabiner, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. You clip yourself, because remember he said that woman that passed away, he had to unclip himself, step over her, and then clip himself back to the rope again.
Mm.
So it's not like you're, at some point, you have to do physical work and get up there.
Yeah. But being clipped onto the rope doesn't assure you safety, does it? Like you could potentially still fall.
Yeah,
even
sure.
though clipped. I would imagine. I'll never know firsthand, so I'm just going to imagine and leave it at that.
Yeah. See why he needs to have a book?
He needs to write a book.
I mean, we would all read that.
Right.
And he needs to do it while it's all still really fresh in his mind.
Yes. Oh, this is beautiful.
This is the Price is Right, that mountain climber. Wouldn't you want to hear this in your iPad or your headphones as you're walking up the mountain?
It would inspire me.
It would make me want to jump off. For 60 hours?
Well, you know how he crashes over at the end? That would be you.
What happened there?
He crashed over at the end. You never watched The Price is Right?
The Price
is Right. I've
only seen
it a few times. And that's AC/DC, Wendy, did you say?
Yes.
Boy, they sound different. They're very enjoyable. I've always liked their stuff. So that's one of the. Forgive me for not knowing this. I've seen The Price is Right, but I don't.
Come look at this.
Okay, so you play the
it's
game.
It's one of the games.
They bring out a product, and you say the price. And
higher
if you're higher or lower, and if it's high, the mountain climber goes up.
Oh.
You don't want him to go so far up the mountain that he crashes over or you lose.
You lose the prize.
Right.
Oh, all right. And that's both Bob Barker and Drew Carey era? Both?
Forever, yeah.
Oh, and all right.
Look, come look at this. You'll recognize it. It goes up real slowly. It's based on Chef Hans Aschbacher. That's who the guy is.
That's the model for that? That's excellent. All right, I'll start watching Price is Right.
You need to, Bill.
I guess so.
I could listen to this all day and then go to Hofbrauhaus
and have a pretzel in Lederhosen.
Oh. The other day, Kim, I was fortunate enough to sit at the White Sox game in these special boxes where they've got people who consistently ask you if they can get you
scout seats.
And in addition to that, you can go inside. There's a little tunnel. And then when you go inside, they have those Bavarian pretzels that you always see in
my
malls.
Favorite.
You can have as many of them as you want.
Oh.
And they also have I didn't tell you this,
Wendy. They have a little place where you can put your mustard. That's my issue at Wrigley.
They do have that.
Because you have to put it on your paper, and then your paper gets yucky.
Yeah,
and
popcorn,
I agree.
Popcorn, too, that you can just dish
popcorn,
your own popcorn.
They have cake. They had, this was the part that got me. It's an icy machine that shows lemonade flavored, but then in addition to the lemonade, it shows other flavors. And I said to the girl standing there, do you switch off the flavors every game? And she goes, what do you mean? I go, well, look, they show mango and blue raspberry. I go, what do you put them on? And she goes, no, all you have to do is press the button and you get that flavor. And I said, could you just hug me? Because this is like the happiest I've ever been in my life. This is amazing.
I didn't know that was there because I'm usually drinking alcohol.
Oh. Well, they had plenty of that, too.
Although, I like the idea of mixing a little vodka into
there you go in your slush.
Yeah.
But the unlimited part is the part that you just go, what?
Did you go to the buffet beforehand?
Yes.
Dessert cart, too, like at the Blackhawks game?
There was not a dessert cart, but in the buffet room, there's a constant stream of desserts, and you can just help yourself to whatever you want.
It's sometimes hard to sit and watch a game after you eat that much.
It has ruined me.
Yeah, I know.
It has so totally ruined me.
Sometimes it's better if you just get a hot dog or something.
Right.
Because this is like quality food.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's a carving station and fish and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Pizza for the kids, which I see a lot of adults taking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, the game was great. It was a beautiful night, and the White Sox won and stuff. But I'm just sitting there going, "This is. I could just get another Slurpee if I wanted another Slurpee. This is all right." All right, Kim. Thank you very much for hanging out.
Have a good weekend.
We'll close. Thank you, and you. We'll close things off in just a little bit. That's it, everybody. Wasn't that great?
Yeah, I had a good weekend.
That was fun.
I wanted you to have a really super great Father's Day.
I'm going to try my best.
Good.
Happy Father's Day, of course, to Jimmy and to your father-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
And to any fathers you may see over the weekend, please give them a hug for me. Tell them I said Happy Father's Day.
I will do that.
All right. We'll be back on Monday for more exciting adventures. We hope you'll join us then. Bye, Wendy.
See you, Bill.